Luther Whitlock is a real honor to be able to introduce him. I got to know him when he was running the Trinity Forum, an organization some of you may know, which is a Christian inflected sort of public policy and humanities institute program. Originally founded mainly to appeal to businessmen, but it also appeals to the few stray politicians who are willing to talk to people from the other side, and it's a kind of reconciliation ministry in a place that badly needs it, our nation's capital. Anyway, I was appointed a senior fellow there, and I watched Luther kind of rescue this very worthy but failing organization that was founded to promote discourse, civil discourse, and inquiry, and reflective thought. And so, and especially among a variety of people, academics and lay people alike, and from different religious backgrounds, including various kinds of Christians, Jews, non-believers, etc. So it was a terrific thing, and I was full of admiration for his ability to pull together the combination of sources of support needed to make this institution continue to stay alive and thrive as it is now. He's gone on to other things. He's executive director of the CNL Charitable Foundation, the Senna Family Foundation, and the president of Excelsis, which he will probably want to tell us about. Before that, he was the president for many years, 23 years, of the Reformed Theological Seminary, which he grew from a rather obscure regional school to one of the most innovative and pervasive seminaries. It's one of the 10 largest seminaries in North America, has 7 campuses in the United States, and virtual programs all over the rest of the world, Asia, South America, and Europe. He's a major figure in the Protestant Christian world, seminary world, and I could read off all of his accomplishments. He's been on every board that you could name, the National Association of Evangelicals, the John Stott's organization, the John Stott Ministries, Lausanne Committee. Those of you who know the evangelical world will know these are all the sort of major organizations. He's also an author. He's published extensively, including, let me make a pitch for his new book called Divided We Fall, Overcoming a History of Christian Disunity. And that's, I think, going to be the substance of his remarks, going to be drawn from that book, which I, among other people, endorsed heartily. He's a graduate of the University of Florida. We have some Gators out here, I think. And Westminster Seminary and Vanderbilt. Has many children and grandchildren. Trying to repopulate the earth with reformed Christians. The reason I think it was an inspired idea of Lenore's to have him here is because he is an institution builder. And this is, it seems to me, one of the things that we neglect as conservatives is we think that what we need to do is recover a set of ideas that somehow we've lost or that we've forgotten or that we inadequately articulate. And all of that's true. We've mangled all of those things. But in addition, what we really need to do is to build institutions. We had a session with the fellows who I hope won't mind if I repeat this, in which we talked about this. And Dan Devine said, we need a new Buckley, William Buckley. I think one of the fellows said it first, and then he repeated that. We need a new Buckley. We need some, not for his wit, not for his amiable television manner, not for his column, not for his books, not for his silly spy novels. That's my addition. Because he was an institution builder, because he created this thing, National Review, which has had enormous staying power, has gone through changes as any healthy, vital institution must, but that he held it together in the early years during a time when you had people who would have a hard time being in the same building, let alone being in the same room with one another, and got them to cooperate, got them to take part, herded them without them knowing they were being herded sometimes into a general enterprise. Very skillful, just an enormously gifted man in this respect. It may have helped, as Dan pointed out, that he was younger than the people he was herding, so that in some way they could feel superior to him even as he was moving them around. So there are all kinds of ways that the institution builder has gifts that can't be conjured up, but they have to sort of come with the package. But there are lots of examples. Irving Kristol's another example, somebody who's, I think, in many ways more important as an institution maker, institution builder, than as a writer or thinker. We don't think, and this is partly an American debility, we don't think about institutions. We're, I think, too prone, and here I think I take some exception to some of the sentiments immediately preceding this, we're too prone to think institutions are impediments to progress and health, and that there's a sort of preferential option for blowing them up, a Schumpeterian imperative, we'll call it. I can share some of that some of the time, but institutions are the way that you transmit ideas and make them realities on the ground over a period of years, over a period of generations. Institutions have momentum that no one person or one living group of people can have. They have an inertia, in a good sense of inertia. They carry forward embodiment of permanence and of principle. There's a way in which an institution is the embodiment of a principle, of a long obedience in one direction, as Kierkegaard said. And of course, that long obedience, as any organization, the church perhaps more than any other is an example, needs periodic renewal, periodic reformation, if you will, to reorient itself, recalibrate itself, renew its sense of mission. So there's a lot of balancing that needs to go on. There's a special skill of leadership, especially in organizations that have diverse factions, diverse entities, some of which may have equally legitimate claim to the animating mission of the organization. So how do you do that? How do you reconcile those factions without making one group the winner, the other group the loser, and yet have an organization that still has some coherence, that still stands for something, that has a unity, that does not suppress its diversity, but lives with it and embraces it. This organization is precisely such an organization. Its vitality is inseparable from the degree to which we can provide an arena where disagreements can take place, often vehement ones. Diversity itself is not an end in itself. It's simply a part of the human condition. But how do we create an organization that has a sort of intellectual vitality to move forward the principles that we esteem and that we think are essential to the well-being of ourselves, of our children, and generations to come? So I think it was a stroke of genius, Lenore, to invite somebody who's written a book on just this subject, how to deal with the fractured state of our churches in the United States and to some extent in the world too. So I give you Luther Whitlock, president of Reformed Theological Seminary and author.